Welcome to the Multimedia Men Podcast, special edition of WWE and WWE Universe. I'm Brian Kluger. I'm with Tom Nick. Say hi, Tom.
Hello, everyone.
I'm Mike Pertill. Say hi, Mike.
Hey.
And Angie. Say hi, Angie.
Hey.
And we are here to discuss Extreme Rules, the latest pay-per-view from WWE. And last time you heard from us, we discussed everything WrestleMania and Raw, but now, 1 month later, one pay-per-view later, things have gotten
this special event later.
Are there pay-per-views anymore? I guess not.
Because of the network, they're trying to call them something else because a lot of the viewers they're going to get aren't technically paying per-view, you know what I mean?
Well, so special events later, things have gotten totally out of control. Just completely out of control. So let's start with Extreme Rules, which I guess is the pay-per-view after WrestleMania and usually the worst pay-per-view out of the year. Backlash used to be the worst pay-per-view of the year, right? And that was after WrestleMania.
Hey, this one I was like impressed mostly-ish.
Let's talk about like pretty much only one belt changed hands, and that's about it. But let's start. Tom, what do you want to start with? What was your favorite match?
Okay, well, my favorite match, as everyone's favorite match on this podcast, right, is Evolution versus Shield.
wait. Can we at least talk about WLC?
Yeah.
I'll be honest. I did not see the Little Man match. I skipped it.
It was fun, and I mean...
It was too short notice for me. Sorry.
No pun intended.
Yeah. The WLC match was exactly what it should have been. It wasn't too embarrassing, although the announcers were pretty embarrassing. but, like, the actual match itself was kind of exactly what I would have hoped it to be. You know, a very, you know, light-hearted comedy match that was all about fun, and it was never taken too seriously, and it was full-size dudes bumping their asses off for little dudes. Like, it was fun. I enjoyed the WLC match much more than, you know, I think maybe a lot of people thought they were going to when they first saw it.
Now, do you think the little people of the world were offended by this match, or do you think this, like, got them excited?
As not a little person, I don't want to put words in little people's mouths, but I don't see any reason why they should be offended by it, per se. Although, again, I will say that while having a midget referee and a midget commentary team is kind of funny on an absurdist level, really, the midget announce team was unnecessary. They were bad at their jobs, and they were just kind of ridiculous to a point of where maybe I can see that being offensive. But, I mean, midget wrestling is something that has existed for a long, 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 long time. And I think in this case, you know, they didn't have anything being done with it where it seemed that they were making fun of the competitors for being short. They were just simply playing off the reality that they have two, you know, under 4 foot competitors wrestling each other. And that was just the theme of the match. It wasn't a whole lot of ha ha ha, look, he's so short, he can't reach this, or he can't do this, or he can't do a drop kick, because El Torito is probably a better wrestler than 60% or 70% of the roster.
That's crazy.
Shoot is a better wrestler than them.
Mike, what do you think?
So, I love El Torito. I thought he should have won an Emmy last year. I was really excited every time he came out on TV. And so I was actually, I thought the match was really entertaining. I mean, I was joking that it was the match of the night, but I think that I hope that Drew McIntyre and Heath Slater actually get that something comes out of this for them, because they ended up being the stars of the match. I mean, McIntyre took that ridiculous bump where he just dove through a table.
Yeah, on his own.
just on his own. And so I think those guys are great. I thought that everybody kind of played it with the right tone. Totally agree with Tom that I thought the announce team was horrendous. I saw that the guy who was the midget Michael Cole was he even Instagrammed a photo before the show of John Cena chatting with the Wyatt family.
Yep.
And it's like he actually did everything wrong that he could have possibly done in his brief moment with the WWE. So
I think, including even using the term slobber knocker like three times, that's not a currently employed announcer's catchphrase.
Yeah, so hopefully we never hear from those guys again. But I really enjoyed VLC, and if WWE ever produces one of those best of the pre-show DVDs, I think it's just going to be that match. And so, you know, having said that, that's pretty good. You know, to have probably the greatest pre-show match of all time is nothing to sneeze at.
And to be perfectly honest, if they hired another miniature wrestler or a midget wrestler that had the skills of an El Torito, like they hired another luchador of his size, I would 100% watch a midget wrestling every single pay-per-view if they wanted to do that with two wrestlers that are as skilled as El Torito is and going at it. That would be completely fine with me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're great. And Hornswoggle's chest tattoo that is, I think is... What does it say? Can't hold me down?
Yeah. Yes, I can with one hand, actually.
Oh, the WLC. Hopefully they'll do another one. But let's get back to Tom's favorite match. Angie, what did you feel? What did you think about the Shield versus Evolution?
That match, I was actually kind of at odds of who to cheer for because I'm such a Triple H girl. But I was so impressed with all of those guys. I mean, that match stole the night.
That's awesome.
It was intense. And I was happy with the outcome. And I just got to say, Seth Rollins and his little suicide jump, wow.
I mean, he really kicked it up, you know, a notch with, like, in the last, like, 5 to 6 minutes of that match. Like, it just was chaos completely.
Oh, my gosh. That entire match, I was on the seat of my chair the entire time. I was not bored at one point in that match.
And I haven't seen wrestlers go into the stands for that long in a really, really long time.
Yeah, we need to talk about this later in the night, and we'll make a segment about it. But I for as much as WrestleMania 30 was about pushing the Attitude Era firmly into the rearview mirror and making it about the new generation of stars, Extreme Rules was kind of like, hey guys, is the Attitude Era kind of cool, though?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It was good to see it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we'll talk about the Kane, Daniel Bryan, main event, which was
the
late 90s WWE pay-per-view main event. But
the evolution of Shield.
I think it was so great about and the Shield has been doing this seemingly consistently all 2014, is that each member of the Shield had his moment to be where you said, oh man, that's my favorite guy in the Shield.
And you know, Dean Ambrose running across the two announce tables, or I mean, it was, you know, there's so many highlights of that match. It's really difficult to decide, okay, what part of it do we want to talk about? What point do I want to talk about? Because there was just so much to it. And they furthered their story, and it was amazing. I'm sorry. It was intense.
It was easily the match of the night, and I'm glad that they're showing no signs of even attempting to break the Shield up, and they shouldn't for months and months and months, because they are, as far as I'm concerned, they are the best thing in wrestling right now, period. They are the best thing.
I agree.
Mike called that about a year ago, and he said, like, he wrote an article for the website, and he said this WWE needs the Shield, and they need to win this match because they're the next big thing. Mike called that.
Yeah, they're the best. They are the best. They're booked great. Every single person in that group knows where they personally shine, but also knows where the other two guys shine. And they never try to steal each other's spotlight. They never try to one-up each other. They just know, hey, Dean's great at this. Seth's great at this. Reigns is great at this. Let's make sure that everyone gets paid attention to, because we're all three great at these things. And it's just perfect. Like, they're the perfect stable, the perfect faction, and they're all amazing at what they're amazing at.
And I think that Batista works so much better as, like, in a team rather than solo. And I like Randy Orton solo, but everybody seems to fit in Evolution right now. Like, they're at that right place where they don't need to go solo. They can, they're doing well in Evolution as the bad guys.
Yeah, I thought Evolution was great. I thought Triple H is doing some of the best work of his career over the past few months, which is always exciting because he's had a good career. And I think that, you know, Batista in the six-man setting is perfect. You know, he's intimidating. He knows how to work. He knows how to perform. But a 20-minute match might be a little much for him. But in a six-man tag where he can be. He can be dominant when he's supposed to be dominant, and he can have breaks when Orton and Triple H are the ones in the crowd, fits him perfectly. And I thought that the match was just, it told a really good story. I think it was interesting that the Shield just beat them straight up.
But it wasn't an easy match, you know? I mean, Evolution gave it to them. I mean, they gave as good as they got. It's just that the Shield was better, you know?
Yeah.
And what I really like is that they're seeming to continue it. You know, we may have another form of that match the next pay-per-view. Or, you know, not exactly that match, but, you know, just, you know, something. There's definitely a feud brewing there. And I like that they're continuing it.
I never thought I would say this post 2001, but I want to see Triple H on every pay per view this year, because this man is straight up New Japan Pro Wrestling all of a sudden. Like, he's bumping like a champion, he's selling like a champion, he can clothesline your larynx out the back of your skull. Like, he is working his ass off, and it's great. He is a great character, and he's finally backing it up with, hey, I am a legitimately great wrestler on top of all of this, where, you know, ever since he came back from that quadricep injury, he never really shone like he did in the late 90s, early 2000s. But like I said, I don't know what kicked the switch in his head to be, like, a go toe-to-toe with Daniel Bryan wrestler, but he can, and I want to see him wrestle as much as he wants to wrestle.
I will second that. As a Triple H fan.
Was your favorite part of that match when he jumped off the stands onto Evolution?
Honestly, yeah. It was like, I saw when they came down the stairs, you know, I saw Seth, you know, get up, but I thought he was just going to come back down, but I was so concentrating on the others. And then all of a sudden, he's falling from the sky. And I'm like, whoa, that was... It felt like you know, again, early 2000s, watching, you know, like the Hardys and the Dudleys go at it, you know, with somebody falling from the sky. It was, I thought it was impressive because I haven't seen that in a while.
It was good. That was, I think, probably one of my favorite matches. But as we have to move on, we have to.
Batista's Jordans were my favorite part of the match. I like that he's managed to work that into his persona.
Oh, Batista. Moving on, we have to talk about the Rob Van Dam match. What do y'all think?
You say that like it's going to be a burden.
Well, I mean, I like RVD. I do. He's definitely not what he used to be, but he's still giving it. He's still fun to watch, still doing the same thing over and over.
Yeah, so those two things don't make sense.
No, he's still fun to watch. I just think he...
I disagree.
He's not fun to watch. I still like him because I guess I just haven't seen him in a while, and it's nostalgic for me to see him, even though he's still doing the same thing.
You could have taken, you know, Rob Van Dam from how many years ago to... He'd be, yeah.
Pick a year.
It's cool when I first saw him, and I'm like, whoa, that's Rob Van Dam, woohoo. And then it's like, is there more?
Yeah, that sounds like cigarettes. You know, Cesaro won, which is good. He needed to.
Yeah,
I mean, but the sooner Cesaro can get away from Rob Van Dam, the better. If Rob Van Dam spends the summer feuding with Jack Swagger, I'm fine with that. Because
his own thing,
I can take or leave Jack Swagger.
See, I love him. He needs tweaking. He's not perfect, but I love Swagger. I love him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a good character in Jack Swagger somewhere, and there's certainly a really good wrestler because he can do some really impressive things. But I just don't want Rob Van Dam anywhere near guys who are rising to the top.
I don't think he. I don't
you think
he
he's
will.
Poison.
Kind of
is. Like he's such a bad wrestler. Like he's a bad wrestler. He's great at spots, and he's good at making offense look good, sort of. And he was better at that when he was younger, obviously. And I'm not going to take anything away from what RVD did for the business and how he changed the game of professional wrestling, because he was doing things that no one was doing, and he deserves the respect that he gets for, you know, changing styles and bringing in a new thing. But like Brian just said, he has had the same match almost beat for 15 years. And he has no psychology. He has no ability to sell an opponent's offense in that way. It's just, okay, let me do that thing where I put my legs around you and turn it into a pin. Okay, lay here, let me do that Rolling Thunder thing. Okay, lay here, let me do this foot leg moonsault. Like, it's all stuff that he has to allow the other person to get in position for his shitty offense. And he can't just do it naturally, because he's not a good wrestler.
But luckily, his moves do look good and are fun to watch.
And that's true. And again, like, for as old as he is, he's like, what, 42, 43? The fact that he can still do splits is pretty impressive. And the fact that he can fold himself up like he does is pretty impressive. He's keeping himself in shape. But for someone who's just going to be there for 3 months at a time and then leave and then come back 4 months later and then stay for 3 months and leave, you don't need to put that wrestler in a match or in a title thing or in any, or like Brian said, put, or not Brian, Mike, put it anywhere close to someone who is honestly on the rise up. Like, he is a waste of time. You put RVD against your new talent, like Adam Rose, and you let them work a program together and use RVD as a lower Chris Jericho to get your new guys over, because he can sell, and and he can still beat the new wrestlers with his moves, and people love seeing the frog splash, and people love seeing the moonsault, and all that stuff. But if you put him in a program with a future world champion, like Cesaro is, he's going to be world champion probably next year, you're really just wasting everyone's time, because this wrestler is not going to be around, and he's not good enough, like a Jericho, to legitimately put someone over at that level.
Yeah, that's the question. Do you think Rob Van Dam will be here in 4 months or 3 months?
No.
Well, no, I mean, he might be, but it almost doesn't matter, because he'll either be here doing the exact same thing that he's doing now,
right.
Or 3 or 4 months from now, he'll be off, and we'll see him again in 2 months.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no story that involves Rob Van, like, there's no depth to Rob Van Dam's character.
Correct.
Like, it's all over. And I enjoy being so harsh on the guy for reasons I can't quite explain. But he is, like, you know, when I first saw The Matrix, I was like, oh man, this is cool. This is really fun to watch. But if someone showed me The Matrix every Monday between, you know, when it came out when I was a teenager and today, I would be like, I hate The Matrix. It's still on my TV.
Oh, well said, sir.
Oh, wow. I don't think anybody could have said that better. I really don't.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, he's got his place. That's fine. But really, you shouldn't be using him in feuds like this, because he's ultimately going to, you know, in some way damper the forward motion of your truly, you know, developing top tier talents. You know, throw him against Big E, who I like. I like Big E, but he's not in a place where he's going to be a world champion in a year. Use him against Fandango. Use him against maybe even Sheamus, who's currently kind of in that mid-level role right now, who he's not going to be headed back to the world title picture immediately soon, but for this little mid-level, you know, thing right here, put Sheamus against RVD. Keep Cesaro away from RVD. Give him Swagger. Give him Kofi Kingston. Give him that kind of stuff. Those could be good feuds for him, but RVD just isn't, he's not the right fit for Cesaro's style, and he's not the right fit for the push that you're trying to give him.
Yeah, it's I'm like I said, it's enjoyable to watch, but I don't know how much longer you can take it. unless they bring back like the hardcore belt, and like he kind
of.
They're
not gonna do that though.
Yeah, they won't do that.
By the way, you mentioned Zack Swagger's character. If I had my druthers with WWE, and obviously I do not, because the "We the People" phrase is still over as hell, even after even post Cesaro, I kind of thought it would dwindle once he stopped playing it, because he was the reason why it kind of got big. But it's still obviously such an over catchphrase that what I would do with those two people is I would keep Zeb and Swagger together, and over the next couple of months, I would switch them from being, you know, xenophobic, racist, you know, America is white and from here, and switch them to being super patriotic, you know, anyone who stands for American values is American, and that kind of stuff, and push them into like a very face patriot role, and start, and like even put like a, as much as you cannot do a copyrighted version of it, put like a Captain America shield on Zack Swagger's chest and still call him the real American, like maybe a single circle and a star or something like that, and have him be that character, just tweak it so that he's a face and is supporting American rights and is supporting, you know, the things the country was founded on, and not where you were born, but, you know, how you do this. If they can tweak that character into a pro-American value, everyone's American, as long as you, you know, believe in these core principles of, you know, freedom and all that kind of stuff, I think he would be huge. He would be huge.
Yeah, that'd be fun to watch. I'd enjoy that.
I don't think I would. I like that, you know, they're putting the bad guy's spin on it. It's only almost like with Edge and Christian when they were the un-Americans, you know? Just being bad.
I forgot about that.
I can you forget about the Un-Americans?
Well, I hated them, but, you know, they were... You know, I appreciate the heel side of it, you know, taking the xenophobic, you know, spin on it. And, you know, almost like people liking the Wyatt family, you know, they're bad. Their message is like creepy as hell. But,
yeah. But the thing with Swagger is that, you know, he's not... He's really not mean or evil.
Right.
He really doesn't have that great, you know, he really doesn't have that great mean streak that Steve Austin always talks about on his podcast that every heel needs. He is kind of a good guy. I mean, he's the all, like, when they brought him in as the all-American, it was in part because the thing that's impressive about him is that he's an amazing athlete.
Yep.
And that's it. You know, that he doesn't have a lot of, he hasn't shown a lot of personality. So putting him with Zeb is great. And I think Zeb, to your point, I mean, I think Zeb could turn face tomorrow if he wanted to because he's so good on the mic.
And Zack Swagger is great and is very powerful and is a very good wrestler, but like you said, his personality isn't exactly there, and you need a good personality to be a heel, where you don't need a good personality to be a face. You don't need it.
He's got no personality. I cannot stand him because he's so one-noted. I'm here to beat somebody. Brock Lesnar has no real personality, but still, he's a great bad guy. So I think that Jack Swagger, if, you know, he just was allowed to take it that way, he could. And I think he'd be a really good bad guy if they let him be one.
Hmm. I don't know.
He could be, but they've been using the real Americans xenophobia thing for almost 3 years now. So 2.5 years at least.
Yeah.
So I think it's time it just ran its course. Find someone else to be the heel. Keep him with the catchphrase that's super over. Lean him towards face. Make Zeb face. Make Swagger kind of go along with him. And just have them stand up for people instead of trying to rip them down. You know, have them come out and be the heroes that save people that are in problem. Because I honestly think you could make Jack Swagger into a superhero. And people would believe it. I really think you could.
That would be... I would like that better than what it is now.
Yeah, it's because it's just kind of staled out. Like, it was great when he first got it and was going for the feud with Del Rio. That was a really, really good... Like Zeb's promos were great. The vignettes were great. The feud was great. And then, obviously, he got, you know, arrested for being high and driving. And then they kind of derailed it. And now it's just kind of, well... The gimmick kind of works for us and to keep doing it, and it's just gone on too long. Like, you need to tweak it and tweak it and tweak it to kind of get him out of it. But I think if you gave him even a, you know, a 5 or 6 month face reign before turning him heel again or whatever, that's fine. But I just really think if you gave him a superhero gimmick, kind of like the Hurricane, but not that goofy, but if you made him like a actual all-American hero or something like that and gave him kind of a made his singlet a little more fancy, gave him like a Swagger logo that you put him on his singlet, people would be much more behind him, especially with Zeb as a mouthpiece.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to wrap it up, the way to become the biggest face in wrestling is if you murdered Rob Van Dam in the middle of the ring.
With a gun.
With a gun. That would be great. So, moving on to the Intercontinental Championship that changed hands, will Bad News Barrett change his name to Good News Barrett now?
No.
Are y'all happy that Bad News Barrett won?
Yes.
Although, you know, I am really happy. I do hope that, and I think that we're headed this way with him, where he's going to actually... kind of revive the division, but I thought Big E had a really solid match both on Sunday and on Monday night. And I hope that he gets kind of rebooted into something that shows his personality a little more, because I really like him. But Barrett is just, Barrett's great. And I'm just delighted every time he's on.
Did you guys happen to watch the post show to Extreme Rules?
I did not.
No.
So it was okay, but you saw a little bit of this on Monday Night Raw. They kind of showed it, but they tried this new thing that I kind of half like and kind of mostly hate, where they have press conferences for the wrestlers.
Yes.
It's not the best. I get what they're going for, but it's not that good. But the reason I bring it up is Big E, he was the only wrestler they interviewed that lost his match. No, sorry, they also interviewed RVD, which was terrible. But they interviewed Big E about, how do you feel and what happened with this? And Big E, for the second time in his history, busted out his sweet 1940s sports announcer voice. And was talking about, I gave him my all, and next time I'm just going to try better, something. And, it was amazing. And if they let him actually use his, honest-to-God personality and not just be the big musclehead guy, if they let him speak the way he really is and loosen up a little bit, I think people would get a little more behind him, because right now he's a face that's a face because he's big, but he could be a much better face if they really honestly just let him do what he does, be a goofball, be a whatever, and then also, on counterpoint to that, when he has to turn it on in the ring, he really can turn it on and beat the crap out of people. But if he shows off as, this fun, loving, cool, I say cool, kind of nerdy doofus, that would be not a bad character trait to have, because he's really entertaining on the microphone.
And, honestly, I think that's why I really was going for Barrett in that match, is because in my opinion, I hadn't really seen Big E have much of a character, and I didn't care about him.
I agree.
So I was going for that entertained me, and Bad News Barrett entertains me. I'll be totally honest. That's what I was cheering for him.
Yeah, well, a lot of that is the, he won the Big E won the Intercontinental title, and then he either appeared in six-man tags or got beat, but we really never saw him do anything of interest after winning the title. And so there wasn't anything to care about.
And that's kind of the arc of the IC belt the last couple of years, is Vincent just gets the ass kicked in every non-title match and then wins every title match, and it's just pretty stupid, you know what I mean? It's just a lot of no one cared about a title, so it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
I'm hoping this Bad News Barrett, because he is so over, that they're going to use something with that and throw people that are legitimate contenders, and he's going to be able to beat them well and all that kind of stuff. I honestly miss the days of 2000. Even when wrestling was crap, 2005, 2007, you had feuds for the IC belt that you were like, oh, this title matters. You've got Shelton Benjamin and Christian, doing a ladder match that's great because they wanted that belt. And now it's just kind of hey, who's not doing anything? Put them in the IC title match. There's nothing to make that title mean anything. So I'm hoping that a very over star Bad News Barrett is going to help it. And segue off top of that, I'm also glad that Sheamus has the U.S. belt, because that's a top-level star that is in a mid-level championship that can really make that thing mean something.
Yeah. I'm glad he's getting his... it seems like they don't know what to do with Sheamus besides some of these little things, I think.
Well, I think Sheamus, in order to be a top level star again, maybe his destiny is to not be a top level star, I don't know, but I would love it if Sheamus' character drifted away from just childish jerk.
Yep.
And into something else. When he feuded with Triple H when he first came in, he was this kind of dark character that was so driven that he was willing to do things that were really outside the bounds of professionalism, like, you know, smash Triple H in the wrench, with a wrench in the back of the neck. Like, just stuff that was like, you know, he was a dangerous character. Now he's just a childish jerk, and I can't stand Sheamus's character. And even though, you know, he is a good wrestler, so I'd like to see him wrestle, but not, like, I generally want to see him get crushed. And so I'm really hoping, after he won that Battle Royal on Monday night, he seemed to be a jerk about the whole thing in a way that was a little bit more towards being an actual heel,
yep,
rather than just a jerk face. And so I'm hoping that we see a big shift in Sheamus's character, and that with that we get better Sheamus and either better U.S. title or merged into Intercontinental title, U.S. title.
And let's be fair, Sheamus's character, ever since he debuted, has pretty much been bully. Even when he's a face, he's still, like you said, he's a childish prick, basically. And
yep,
people cheer for him, but he's not doing anything fundamentally different. Like, sure, he's laughing and giving more positive promos, but if you look at what he actually does, he picks on people and beats them up, and that's what he's always done. So
yeah,
if you switch that back to his heel persona and just make him a bully, and the nice thing about him is that he can kick anyone's ass. Like, he is a legitimately good wrestler. He's huge. His biggest weapon is a kick to the face. Like, you know, that's just what he is. And if you just put him on that path and say, hey, Sheamus is better than everyone in the U.S. title division, and he's going to kick you in the face to prove it, that's all you need to do. Just let him go on a rampage. Let him be a complete asshole to everybody. And be like, yeah, you can't beat me. Of course you can't. Look at how big I am. Also, I kicked you in the face. And that's all you have to do. And let him roll with that, and you can build a lot of good faces up around him, because he does work best as a heel, because I think he just is... I think the actual Sheamus is a nice guy, but also I think that the actual Sheamus is kind of like a CM Punk, where he is always going to have kind of a chip on his shoulder, because he just loves violence, period. Like, he loves fighting. And that's his character, but I think in real life, he just enjoys the thrill of being in that kind of zone. So you make him do that, and you make him be kind of a dickhead about it, and you have the opportunity to get a lot of guys over with someone who can legitimately work, and you love seeing them fight.
Yeah. I look forward to more of him in a different setting, but I'll take him whenever I can get him, because he at the pay-per-views or the last pay-per-view, he's usually on like the talk show or something like that with Booker T. But it's good to see him move in ranks and whatnot.
Yeah, dressed like a chimney sweep at the Extreme Rules.
Yeah, he was. So what we have to talk about the Bray Wyatt John Cena match and how weird that ending was.
I loved the ending.
Really? What was the? Well, I didn't understand why they were going that way.
Well, because it's a big deal that Cena has all these, you know, he does all these things for the kids, and all of a sudden the kids are turning against him. You know, I really enjoyed the match. To a point, you know, but the reason why I'm kind of hesitant a little bit about it is because I thought the cage was supposed to keep the other Wyatts from interfering, you know, so I didn't like that there was so much interference by the other members of the family, or that they pretty much just seemed to want to climb out of the cage instead of beat each other's ass, or, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I really would have liked to see it end more with a pinfall than, oh, look, I'm out of the cage. But, you know, but I did enjoy the story being continued and the fact that it was a child that really was John Cena's downfall.
That just seems odd in this setting.
So I hated the match.
Mike and I have the same mind.
The thing that was so upsetting to me was that Cena easily dispatched of all three Wyatt family members, and Angie, like you said, you know, they go into this match saying that, you know, Cena's trying to keep Bray Wyatt's message from escaping the cage, and, you know, Bray Wyatt's trying to bring out the monster and John Cena, and then they both keep trying to just run out of the cage, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense based on everything that they had so carefully built up to that point. And then the other two Wyatt family members, like you said, they kept getting involved, but they also kept getting their asses kicked. And so by the end of it, you know, like the way the match ends, all three Wyatt family members are destroyed at the hands of John Cena, and he goes to just walk out of the cage, and he was never really put in a position where he was in any kind of danger. But the Demon Kid was a nice touch. I really enjoyed the Demon Kid. And it didn't make any sense, why they had this kid on deck but decided, like, to only use him in this instance, all that. That didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, considering that now on Monday Night's Raw, wasn't it, like, the Shield and the Wyatts?
Yeah, but Cena on main event, Cena addressed the Wyatts like they're not done. So they're gonna revisit that. I imagine next week we'll see some interaction between them.
Yeah.
But
yeah, reason
the thing that oh I'm sorry.
I was gonna say on Raw the reason why they were put against the Shield was put against the Wyatts. It's not to further their feud, even though, the, you know, I think that was pretty, they just kind of went their separate ways. I think there is more there, but I don't think they're going to take it that way yet if they choose to take it back to a Wyatt Shield thing.
Yeah.
I think really furthered the story of Triple H furthering his own goals and using a very powerful team like the Wyatts to further his own goals against the Shield.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, no, yeah, the problem with the very powerful thing, or the very powerful entity known as the Wyatts, they got their asses kicked by one guy 2 weeks in a row, and, like, that really does help destroy the mystique of the Wyatt family when one guy, yeah, it's John Cena, but one guy, like, isn't even threatened by them, like,
yeah.
You know, gets to a point where he's like, you know, really overcomes the odds, or they mess up and bump into each other or something like that, and he takes advantage of it. No, he just beats the dick out of them completely and utterly 2 weeks in a row, basically. So, and like, this is a thing where, I forget when it was, when Daniel Bryan had to fight them and CM Punk had to fight the Shield, like, everyone was like, how are you going to win that match? Of course you're not going to win that match. You're up against forces of nature, and you're one guy. And that doesn't happen with John Cena. And like I said, I understand the need to protect John Cena to a certain extent. Like, you can't just have him get squashed by the Shield. And I understand that's never going to happen. But you don't need to protect him to the point where, you know, he overcomes 15 attempts at cheating and 15 attempts at triple teaming. He just overcomes them and wins anyway. Because, yeah, he was going to walk out of that cage. And, sure, the kid stopped him. And I get the message they're trying to say. But I think what's really turned me off about this feud is that it's all tell, don't show. We're telling you that the kids are turning on John Cena, and we're telling you that Bray Wyatt's getting into his head. We're telling you that all these things are happening, like, in the mic work, that's what they say. But nothing in the storyline is showing you, like, why are kids all of a sudden flocking to John Cena? Because if that was the case, or sorry, flocking away from John Cena, because if that was the case, they would have John Cena in the ring basically getting booed or saying things that would lead him to get a little more negative reaction. but they're having him be just as popular as ever, and then saying, oh, but you're losing your fan base. But you're not. You're clearly not losing your fan base. So it's a lot of mixed signals going on in that feud, and I do think it's going to continue, and I hope they start getting it right. But John Cena is single-handedly ruining Bray Wyatt.
Yeah, and the thing that concerns me the most, and this bleeds into Monday, is that, you know, Bray Wyatt got up and did his, you know, that you'll view me as a god, and he's not the first heel to declare himself a god, but the problem is there's nowhere to go beyond that, and John Cena on main event, Cena explicitly called it out, and asked the crowd, you know, what do you believe in? And Cena obviously believes in never give up, and, you know, so now that the fans are now faced with this question of, well, do you believe in Bray Wyatt as God, or do you believe in not giving up? And, you know, that's not going to draw people to Bray Wyatt. It's the kind of move that's a little too desperate for somebody who is in the very early stages of his career. And so I feel like it's a situation where I don't know how they get out of this without Bray Wyatt somehow. Like, if he comes out at Payback and he just crushes John Cena, I don't know that that's enough at this point to sort of restore him to what he was going into this feud. And that's disappointing. I think that the...
Sorry, I'm not meaning to step on it, but the part where I see him drawing in fans is, yeah, he did the whole I'm a God thing, but he also said, I'm representing... You know, the people who were looked down on, the people who were told they weren't pretty, you know, the people, yes. You know, that's where I think that they should really spin it. Not the God thing, but it's almost like, how do I, you know, as if I were, you know, one of the people that I felt were looked down on, I could really see myself getting behind this guy, even though he's calling himself a God. He's fighting for me to make sure that I am noticed. So, I mean, I can see that, and that does speak to some of the fans. I mean, because one of you was saying something about how John Cena is so popular. That crowd is 50-50. Wyatt, Cena, you know? And,
There's a difference, though, because you're right, it is 50-50, but the WWE is booking it as though John Cena is 100%. Like, they're booking it as though he is everybody's hero, and he is the conquering champion, and he must defeat evil, and he is not that to anybody but children.
But they are also building that, how Wyatt's message is spreading, how they're, you know, the people are singing in the crowds and starting to pay more attention to Bray Wyatt. And I like how they're doing that, you know, bringing in, oh, the crowd's reaction to this. And so, no, they're starting to play it that way, too.
But in the booking of the matches, that's out the window. Like, because he is starting to build it, but they need to take the wrestling into consideration. Because the promos are there, and the audience is behind Wyatt. You know, they're clapping for his theme song, and they're singing, he's got the whole world, and that's a good, natural kind of thing they've built up. But when they're doing the matches, they are booking it as though John Cena overcomes all things no matter what. And if John Cena wants to play that, and he is actually affected by the fact that more and more people are not getting behind him, and they are getting behind Bray Wyatt's message, that should, you know, emotionally cripple him. Like, those audience cheers and those boos to a certain extent, he expects a certain level of boos. But if he's getting more and more and more boos every week, that should actually affect him in the wrestling ring to the point where Bray Wyatt is easily trouncing him. And then they can flip it and then have a whole thing of kids come out in Wyatt masks, and then at the last second, take off their outfits, and they all have green on underneath, and they're all John Cena fans, and they always have been.
That would be awesome.
And he can rally back and beat him, because that's the thematic thing to the story. I'm okay with that. I get it. But they're not telling the same story they're telling in their promos with the matches.
Yeah. I mean, I would like for that to happen, but I just don't see that happening anytime soon. I wonder if people feel like the whole kid angle is, you know, too much, and they're not using it right.
It's weird, and it's interesting, and it's different, and it kind of kept me interested. But the kid didn't really show up on Raw, so I'm not really sure. And granted, John Cena didn't show up on Raw, so maybe that's why. But again, they need just to correlate what they're trying to say with the promos and with the packages and with the overall message of the feud. They're not correlating that in the actual matches. And at the end of the day, the matches are the most important. And like I said, when you see one guy defeat three men easily twice in a row, and especially when he, you know, basically single-handedly beat the Wyatts on that Raw when everyone voted him in, and he was like, oh, why would you guys give me an impossible task that I easily accomplished? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, if you're going to cut that promo, you should have gotten the shit kicked out of you. Like, you should have just lost. And yet, he did lose. Well, no, he didn't even lose. He won by DQ. So he should have gotten destroyed. And then that whole promo saying, you guys turned on me, but I'm going to fight anyway because there are people that still believe in me. That makes sense. You are not connecting the dots of your story at all.
I agree. But that's enough about Cena and Wyatt right now. Let's move on to the Yes Movement and Kane. I still feel that Kane is one of the worst wrestlers, and I'm just sick and tired of seeing him wrestle. And I mean, he seems to still want to have a feud with Daniel Bryan after this special event, Extreme Rules, because he tried to scare Daniel Bryan with his fire. Ugh, God. I'm not a Kane fan at all. He just walks around and hits people. That's all he does. The only cool thing about that match between Daniel Bryan and Kane at Extreme Rules was when he threw the oxygen tank through the car window.
That was a pretty good toss.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's like, why are we doing this? Why are we here? Oh, look, there's Kane. And why is Daniel Bryan getting this shitty-ass match right now? That's what I felt inside.
I felt like both Sunday and Monday were like the Adam West Batman, but with a serious tone.
Oh,
and so like the match, you know, they go back, they go to the back, they're running through all these, and it was all these spots that were like, you know, Kapow and Zam, and like, and there wasn't, it didn't have an organic flow to it, to the point that, you know, this 7-foot monster is just lying crippled on a forklift for 5 minutes while it drives out to the ring.
And I feel like it would have been an organic match if it wasn't, if somebody else were replacing Kane in this, because Daniel Bryan knows what to do. Kane never has.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that it's not so much because I don't feel as strongly about Kane as you do. I actually think he's pretty good. I think that it's more the character that Kane is currently playing, this demon Kane, is just really out of place when we know that he's just Kane.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Monday night when he was, you know, Daniel Bryan rushes to the front and immediately fixes his car because a wire is exposed or whatever he said.
There's a wire.
You know, it had such a camp feel to it but they're trying to convince us that it's this serious threat. The two don't add up. It doesn't, and so it's so hard to feel invested in the match, despite the fact that both, both Kane and Daniel Bryan are capable of having good matches, and Daniel Bryan is more than capable of having great matches.
I agree, and like it's like what Stephanie McMahon said. She said something like, Kane put on the mask and he turned into the demon. So is she insinuating that he's normal to begin with, but when he puts on the mask, he's like transformed into something? They haven't really gone into that, at least that I haven't seen recently.
Well, I mean, you could also think of it as, you know, some people will literally hiding behind a mask. He allows himself to go that extra vicious step because he's got the mask on and it's not really him. So, but, you know.
But they bill him as like a demon from hell. Basically, he raises his hands and fire comes out. It's just it's ridiculous, and he's so slow and just so he's not entertaining to me. And I hate that him and Daniel Bryan are still gonna have a feud because I think Daniel Bryan deserves way better right now.
They need to do something with Daniel Bryan because the leading up to Extreme Rules, it was like, where's Daniel Bryan? Oh, he's injured and he's not here. All right, he's our champion. What do we do with him? Oh, look, he's married. Now he's got a Brie Bella that runs around with him. I just did not feel invested in Daniel Bryan at all. I wanted Kane to get Brie because I'm like, finally, we're going to see some fire in Daniel. You know? And
it's an odd feud to kick off his reign, but at the same time, there really isn't anyone else he can do it with, because Orton and Batista are obviously locked in the Shield feud, which I like, and I appreciate that. Because, I mean, a Triple H does actually have a feud, or does have a reason to beef with the Shield. Kane's really the only person who is in the authority, or was in the authority, that has a through line, but they are making it overtly silly, especially given that, you know, before WrestleMania, this was supposed to be called the reality era, and this was kind of what it was moving towards, and now all of a sudden we've got, you know, it's fine with The Undertaker because he's never on TV, but when you have a person who's on TV always and his gimmick is, you know, I can essentially teleport, like, it's kind of stupid to do that with a champion that has, of the kind of champion that Daniel Bryan is. So I'm hoping that, you know, the dirt sheets say there's going to be a buried alive or a buried alive match at Payback with Kane and Daniel Bryan, which obviously Kane's not going to win. That's fine, but at least he'll go away for a little while, and Daniel Bryan can move back into, you know, feuding with Orton, maybe even feuding with Triple H again. Obviously, he's got Brock ahead of him. He'll probably have Batista again ahead of him. But it's a very bad 2 months to kick off, you know, what's essentially the most anticipated title reign in a long time. Like, your whole audience wants this guy to be champion, and then you immediately throw him into a feud with a cartoon character. So it's kind of not the best situation. But I do have hope that it will get better.
Do you think they'll go back to, like, their old thing? Because wasn't Kane and Daniel Bryan, like, together for a while?
Yeah, but Team Hell No.
Yeah.
I think we've probably seen the end of Team Hell No. but it'll be kind of cool to see Kane get buried alive. I do think that it would be great to see. It kind of depends on when Brock is willing to work, because I imagine that his next match will be against Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
And that one's going to be pretty damn exciting. Yeah. So, you know, I think Daniel Bryan will probably have a little bit of a lull. I mean, he's got Money in the Bank. There are still 3 pay-per-views or special events between now and SummerSlam. And he's going to fill one of them with Kane. I heard Batista is maybe leaving after Payback, or before then. I'm not sure.
Because he has to do press for Guardians of the Galaxy, probably.
Yes.
I'd say he'll be back by SummerSlam, so he'll do one more S.H.I.E.L.D. match at Payback. He'll probably leave for, you know, until SummerSlam, and then he'll probably get his title match with Daniel Bryan in September, which we'll see what happens. Well, or he'll get it with Brock Lesnar, because there's a very good chance that Lesnar will beat Bryan. And honestly, if I'm being honest, Brock Lesnar should beat Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, I mean, Brock Lesnar should beat everybody.
But it won't happen, though.
I just cannot stand him.
I think Brock Lesnar is defending the championship at WrestleMania 31. I just think it comes down to, is he willing to work three matches between now and then? Two, zero, you know, well, zero won't work, but...
I think 2014 is the year that WWE is attempting to, you know, I think everyone's idea is, oh, well, Brock Lesnar's a part-time talent. He can't win a championship because he only wrestles five times a year at pay-per-views, or maybe even less than that, you know, and then when he shows up on Raw, it's more of an appearance. Like, he's got an appearance contract, and he also has a match contract, and he only wrestles X amount of matches. But, I mean, with Lesnar ending the streak, I cannot believe for a second they wouldn't let Brock Lesnar beat Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam. And maybe if he only appears once a month, because that's why you've got Paul Heyman, right? Like, right. You've got Paul Heyman, and then you've got someone who is probably legitimately as strong as Brock Lesnar on Paul Heyman's payroll. You just basically say, well, Cesaro is the proxy for Brock Lesnar. Do you got a problem with Brock Lesnar? Take it up with Cesaro. And that gets Cesaro over fucking huge, because he can take out anybody he wants to. And, you know, you keep that feud going, that even though Brock's the champion, he's allowing the other Paul Heyman guy to fight in his stead and, you know, pick up the mantle when he's, you know, relaxing and being the champion. You know, I'm the champion. I earned a month off because I'm the best wrestler. You know, whatever. You can spin it any way you want to, but you have a real opportunity to get Cesaro big time over in Brock's absence, if Brock is actually the champion, and you let Paul Heyman do the speaking for both.
Do you think Brock will take over Undertaker's, like, reign, like, just come back at pay-per-views and, or come back at WrestleManias and just win every WrestleMania match for the next?
I don't think he'll start their own streak. I don't think they will, but who knows?
He's also been defeated at WrestleMania, so he's kind of sunk there. I think the only guy who has a streak going in singles matches is The Miz. I'm serious.
I love The Miz.
Well, but you might be the next Undertaker.
We'll see, but I would not be... I wouldn't be disappointed if Daniel Bryan, only had a 6 or 5 month reign as champion. That's still a solid reign. And everyone knows he'll get it back eventually. Like, he's not going to just never see the title again. Like, The Miz is never going to see the title again, ever. Daniel Bryan will get that title back at some point, but he doesn't necessarily need it, you know, after a certain point. And like I said, if they give him good opponents and he defends against, you know, Orton at Payback, or sorry, Orton at Money in the Bank, and, or, well, no, what's after Payback? There's something after Payback.
Yeah, so Money in the Bank's after Payback, and then, like, Battleground is after
Payback. Right. So, like, if he defends against Randy Orton at Battleground, and then defends against John Cena at Money in the Bank, and then defends against Lesnar at SummerSlam, like, that's a fine run for him to have. And like I said, sure, he will get a rematch eventually, and he'll always be in the title picture to a certain extent, but he would have had a successful run. Like, it's not like he got Chris Benoit and got thrown against, like, literal bullshit. Like, he had the most bullshit title run ever for a quote-unquote, you know, breaking talent. We'll see. I mean, they can screw it up, but I would not be upset at all if Brock Lesnar was the champion for the last half of the year at all.
That would be strange to me. I don't see that happening.
No, I'm going to have to disagree. I do not like Brock Lesnar. There's nothing I like about Brock Lesnar.
And WWE is doing their job correctly.
Yeah.
Nothing I like about him.
To wrap this up,
By the way, did you know, Mike, you might need to stop me if I'm spoiling too much, did you know that Mike legally changed his name tonight?
He did?
Yeah, to Mike Lyons Brock Lesnar conquered the Undertaker's undefeated streak at WrestleMania.
No.
I loved when Paul Heyman did that. That was pretty great.
God,
Paul Heyman's great. Speaking of like good lines, let's go around. I'll start with Angie. What's your favorite wrestler's tagline that he says?
I am the game, and I am that damn good.
Mike?
It's CM Punk's entire promo from Raw in 2011.
And Tom?
Can I just say everything Paul Heyman's ever said in his life?
Yes. And I'm going to have to go with Lance Storm's Can I Get Serious for a Minute? I loved when he said that every week. But yeah, there's lots to look forward to. I mean, some of these storylines I can see going some good places, some not so good places, but we hope for the best for the next pay-per-view. And
WrestleMania was so good.
Yeah.
I can't believe that they're going to completely drop the ball on it. Like I said, I think they're in a place where they know they don't have the talent built to really challenge Daniel Bryan yet. And yeah, the John Cena Wyatt feud is just bad writing in general. But to be perfectly honest, I mean, a lot of the stuff on the show is still pretty good. And I do believe that it will fix itself by SummerSlam. But right now it is just kind of weird decision making that is kind of against what they were going for at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I totally agree. I hope they keep it up. But that is our fourth WWE podcast of the Multimedia Men. Again, I'm Brian Kluger. I'm with Tom Nix. You can find him on Twitter, Facebook, and the Smart Marks podcast. And with Mike Pertil and Angie. And you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and Facebook. And thank you for listening. Should we do our team yes, our yes movement chant?
Why not?
All right.
I'm ready.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes.